15 years ago, in April of 1995, when two Americans blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City, Julie Welch was among the 168 people killed. Julie was 23 years old, and she was the light of her father's life. You can easily imagine how devastating it would be for a parent to suffer the loss of a young, vibrant, talented, and beautiful daughter or son. And so perhaps we might not be terribly surprised to learn that Julie's father, Bud, in an effort to numb the terrible pain and rage he was feeling, began to drink heavily. Every day, at some point, he would reach for a drink, and then he would keep on drinking until he fell asleep or otherwise lost consciousness. After a few months, his permanent state was either drunk or hungover. The other thing Bud did every day, besides drink, was to visit the site of the blast, the place where the building had once stood, the place where his daughter had died. But one day, in January of 1996, Bud followed his usual routine, and yet something different happened. On that cold day, as he stared across what still looked like an empty wasteland, for some reason, Bud realized that he had to stop pretending. He had to stop pretending that alcohol was soothing his grief. Stop pretending that it was helping him in any way to figure out how to get on with his life. Bud describes the moment like this. My head was splitting from drinking the night before, and I had this one clear thought. I have to do something different because what I am doing is not working. Bud's not the only person who's ever gone looking for what he once knew as his life and found nothing but wasteland. Long, long ago, a man we remember as the prophet, Jeremiah, also had this experience. And somehow, Jeremiah found the strength or the faith to not shy away, to not try to buffer himself from reality. Jeremiah had watched an entire people, his people, go terribly astray from the love and the guidance of God, and Jeremiah now was having to witness the consequences as people were suffering as a result of their misguided decisions. Their land was actually being overrun by enemies. They were being wiped out. Jeremiah was a man deeply attuned to God. And so he was aware not only of his own frustration in this situation, but also of God's frustration, because God had offered so many opportunities to change course, and the people, the precious and beloved people, had ignored them all. It was anguishing to watch events unfold, and somehow Jeremiah was given the wisdom to know what Bud was just discovering. The only way through an experience like this is to face it and feel it. There would be no use sugarcoating, no use pretending that things were not really so bad, no use trying to go numb. Jeremiah, held by God and sharing God's own feelings, described fully and completely what was happening. He gave voice to his grief. The section of the book of Jeremiah that we're going to be reading today begins with verse 18 of chapter 8, and it goes through the first verse of chapter 9. My joy is gone. Grief is upon me. My heart is sick. Listen, the cry of my poor people from far and wide in the land. Is the Lord not in Zion? Is her king not in her? Why have they provoked me to anger with their images, with their foreign idols? The harvest is past, they cry. The summer is ended, and we are not saved. For the hurt of my poor people, I am hurt. I mourn, and dismay has taken hold of me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then has the health of my poor people not been restored? Oh, that my head were a spring of water, and my eyes a fountain of tears, so that I might weep day and night for the slain of my poor people. Jeremiah, on his own and on God's behalf, is heartbroken, and he's praying here for a greater capacity to grieve. I need a bigger supply of water for my tears, he says. My sorrow is so great that I would cry around the clock if I could. Only constant weeping might be able to express how bad I really feel. Jeremiah sees that people feel abandoned by God and that they don't understand why they have not been rescued from their suffering. At the same time, he senses that God is profoundly hurt by the people's disregard of God and that God can't understand why, when God has placed healers and healing medicine among the people, none of the healers or the truth tellers are doing their job. No one is reaching for the medicine. No one seems willing to take corrective action. But Jeremiah is seeing and feeling all sides of this terribly painful situation, and he doesn't pretend that it's anything but terribly painful. I realize that so far there's nothing cheerful in the story I'm telling you. Not much good news here, you might be thinking, and it's true. So far, we're listening to hard and unvarnished reality. The further reality, though, is what happened for Bud when he began to let himself be as broken and exposed and honest as Jeremiah. When Bud realized that he was not going to be able to push his hurt and his anger away, he decided to get back in touch with his mind and his heart so that he might discover a new path. Instead of drinking, he spent hours every day thinking. And he asked himself to think about this question. Why did my daughter die? But Bud finally concluded, after days and weeks and months of thinking about this, what he finally concluded was that vengeance and hate had killed his precious daughter. The men who made and detonated the bomb, he came to see, were acting out of their own hateful and vengeful feelings. And Bud knew only too well what those feelings were like, because he had a very vivid memory of desperately wishing on the day of the arraignment, when Timothy McVeigh was walking from a vehicle to the courthouse, Bud had this overwhelming wish, why doesn't somebody just shoot him right now? He was conscious of this fierce desire for McVeigh to pay with his life for the awful things he had done. Bud's new insight, more than a year later, was that if the bombers succeeded in transferring their hatred and their need for revenge to Bud, then he was no different from them. He was just carrying on this awful way of being in the world, and nothing would ever get better. He wanted to break the cycle and do something different with his hurt and his anger, all these confusing and difficult feelings. He wanted to do something other than self-destruction through drink, something other than the destruction of lives and hope through violence. None of this happened quickly, but eventually, Bud began to think about Timothy McVeigh's father, Bill. Bud had seen some film footage of Bill trying to take in and respond to the news of his son's inconceivable actions. Bill had been bent over as one physically in pain, face near to the ground, and struggled to stand up, because the TV cameras and the news reporters were there wanting some reaction from him. Bud recognized the physicality of this grief was exactly what he himself had experienced. He'd felt it in his body. And so in 1998, Bud agreed to, he arranged, not agreed, he took the initiative and arranged to go visit Bill at his home in upstate New York. Also present on that day in December of 1998 was Bill's daughter Jennifer, Timothy's younger sister. The two men walked around the yard discussing gardening, which was an interest of Bill's. And then Bill asked Bud if he ever cried. "Yeah," admitted Bud, "I cry a lot. I've got plenty to cry about," said Bill McVeigh, "but I can't. I haven't been able." They went into the house and they sat down at the kitchen table. Bud's attention was caught by all the family photographs that were on the wall, on display there. And in particular, what stood out for him was Timothy's high school graduation photo. He realized that Bill and Jennifer noticed that he was staring at this picture, and so he said, "What a good-looking kid." Bill received those simple words as recognition that to his family, Timothy was not just a reviled terrorist or a despised criminal. He was their son, their brother, and that once upon a time, his life had been full of promise. A tear, one tear, welled up in Bill's eye and rolled down his face. "Ah," realized Bud, watching that tear, "this man is suffering even more than I am. At least I can look people in the eye and say wonderful things about my beloved daughter. This man doesn't even think he has the right to grieve. If he met a stranger, he probably would not even admit he had a son." Before he left their house that day, Bud shook Bill's hand and embraced Jennifer. "The three of us are in this together for the rest of our lives," he remembers saying. And as he walked away from the house, he understood that it was true. He no longer felt that he was walking alone. He had the sensation of a tremendous weight being lifted off his shoulders. His courage in facing his grief and sorrow and rage had become compassion that he was able to extend to others, and now it was opening up into a sense of companionship. Others truly felt and shared his loss, and he saw that his kindness had the power to offer some measure of healing to others. Perhaps, by the grace of God, the day we stop pretending that our misguided strategies are working, or that we've got everything under control, or that circumstances aren't as bad as they seem, perhaps that day is the day that our lives actually can begin to become more livable. Perhaps our willingness to admit our own suffering, or in some cases also to acknowledge our initial misguided reactions to that suffering, is a crucial turning point which gives us strength to go toward something new. Perhaps our ability to weep for ourselves and our world is a gift that opens the way for the restoration of faith and offers us direction for what to do with our hours, our energies, our days. It's a hard sell, I know, because denial of and resistance to the truth appears at first to be easier or less painful than full acceptance. But avoiding reality carries a price, whether it's an individual trying to do it or a group, a city, a nation. Avoiding reality carries a price. And when we get tired of paying that price, we might want to give Bud's path and Jeremiah's path a try. It could be that it's time to let ourselves see, let ourselves know what's really happening. God, after all, already sees and knows. We're not keeping any secrets from God. Maybe if we freely share our grief and our regret and our hurt with God, we will begin to feel less alone. The story I told the children, which if you turn the rabbits back into people, is from Luke chapter 16. has a lot of possible meanings. One of them is that an accurate assessment of our situation, a facing of the truth, is a first step toward moving in a new direction. It might take a few false starts for us to get headed in the direction that God longs for us to go, but it's worth persisting, because what God really wants for us and for the world is a reality in which mourning and crying and pain will be no more. Hunger and thirst will be no more. A world in which every lost person and every lost thing is reclaimed and lovingly embraced. We give up pretending so as to stop obstructing the flow of God's grace in our lives and in the world. Gracious God, we want our lives to represent and serve something good and right and true. In the days and weeks, or even the years, when the world seems to pile on trouble and hardship and struggle and loss, it is easy for us, God, to lose our way. You've seen us, God, turn to things or strategies that are really no help at all, although they may seem to help us forget our distress for a little while. Help us to wake up. Bring us to that moment when we decide it might be better to take another course. Lord, as we surrender our pretenses and our fears and our sorrow to you, be in our hearts, God, be in our minds to help us feel with honesty and think with clarity. Become our trusted guide in how to perceive and how to respond to the reality of our situation. Lead us, Lord, step by step into the peace of your kingdom and the hope of the world as you are creating it. Through our tears, O God, show us what our next action or our next period of rest should be. You've spoken to us, Holy God, through your word. You've spoken of how much you love us and how your heart breaks when we're hurt because we wander away from you or deliberately turn away from you. May your love be the healing balm we turn to whenever our griefs and our mistakes become too much to bear. May your grace open us to receive your healing, your comfort, and your mercy. We long for a world of peace and of justice, O God. Only you can take us where we need to go. And so we pray the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.